menstrual cycle.
Maybe not me.
Sorry?
Oh, sorry. I was yawning in the middle of saying that. I was saying, maybe not me. I'm womp, pretty womp addicted. Button.
Yeah, womp total button. Womp womp, dude.
Thanks for that, Brent. Welcome to the Ancestral Mind Podcast. My name is Colin Stuckert, founder and CEO of Wild Foods Co. and theancestralmind.com. Here we cover all things from an ancestral health perspective. We want to help you build the ancestral mind so you can think about your decisions you make on a daily basis while considering the first principles of what makes you the sexy human beast that you are, Brent Philbin.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Brent, for immediately Philbin, segueing to me there.
Introduce yourself.
I am whatever Colin said about sexy, amazing, all that stuff. That is me. I'm Brent Philbin at Brentity on Twitter. I'm joining this podcast again. I don't even know what my title is this week. It changes every week. So
I haven't fired him yet today. I may fire him and rehire him by the day's end because I do need someone to edit the show. So we'll see how that goes. We are here with a special guest. Her name is Jamie Stuckert, the one and only sister of Colin Stuckert. She's right in front of us. This is her second podcast to date. So let's make her feel welcome. Actually, that'd be a good time to like add like clapping or something cool like that.
Clapping.
Like your little fancy audio board over there. What is that? Mouse scratching?
That was crickets. Oh, started okay. With a C. I thought it might have been clapping.
So Jamie, say hello to the audience.
Hey guys, what's going on? I am a little nervous to be here, but I'm super excited.
Yes, there we go.
I've got the podcast sweat going on, so you know it's going to be good.
Awesome. All right. So today we're going to talk about a few things. We're actually going to do something a little bit interesting today. Brent and I are going to share a little bit of our story. The thing is, my idea for this was all of us came from Florida. We all lived in Florida. That's how we all know each other, right? And so we all have different timelines of how we all ended up back in Austin, Texas in 2019. We're going to tie in our history and how we got here. And then we're going to try to tie that into obviously an ancestral idea to build your ancestral mind. And so we're going to talk with Jamie about shopping addiction, sugar addiction, and being a female, and obviously comfort zone, moving. She moved to Austin. She got out of a relationship that was kind of holding her back. There's a lot of things to making that decision. It didn't come lightly. I had been here for 3 years before that happened. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit, and we're going to explore how that she, in her words, was one of the hardest things she's ever done. And then we're going to tie that into how that can apply to, you know, some of the other ideas of shopping and lifestyle that she has some interesting stories to share with y'all, things that she learned through her journey, struggling with these different things. And there are things that we really all struggle with because, again, we're all humans. We're all Homo sapiens sapiens. And so it's going to be fun to get into that. Now, I mean, where should we start, Brent? Like, what do you think?
Well, here's what we'll start with. Last week, we had Ebony Kenny on the show, and we talked for like 2 hours.
On sex, dating,
about
stakes,
sex,
relationships,
dating, and all that stuff. I'm going to have to say, Colin, we should probably stay away from the topic of sex while you have your sister on the show. So I'm just
Good idea.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I don't think anything's off limits.
Then Jamie, paint us a picture for what your last year in Austin has been like and what you did leading up to that to get here.
I really, really wanted to be in Austin. When you were here for the first 3 years, I was obsessed with this place and I secretly always wanted to move. And I kind of was too afraid to make that jump. Fast forward those 3 years, I finally made the decision to uproot my life and leave a relationship that I was super involved in and come to Austin with kind of no direction and no plan. And that was, I just will never forget laying on a mattress in my first apartment in Austin on the floor crying because I had no idea what the next day was going to bring me. It is obviously the most frightening feeling in the world, but it's also the most liberating feeling at the same time. So I just kept pushing. I managed to finagle a job with my brother with Wild Foods, even though he said, Jamie, I can't really afford you. And yeah, I said, yep. There's got to be a way we can make this work. I'll work part time. I'll teach skating. For those who don't know, I've been skating for 20 years. I was
figure skating.
Yes, figure skating. And I taught for 10 years leading up to Austin. I kind of just came in. I made it work. It's been quite the ride, but I wouldn't change it for the world. I've learned so much over the last year and also basically being in my first career job for the last year, even though I am 30 years old. I was kind of a late bloomer. I did a lot of fun activities and traveled the world from in my 20s mostly. So it's like a reverse retirement. But coming to Austin was the best choice I could have ever made. And I'm around my family and my tribe. And I really couldn't ask for anything else. I'm just so excited to be here.
Okay, great. So some questions. So you had opportunity, you said you had to uproot your life, but like, what does that exactly look like? Because I mean, you weren't in school, right?
Well, you know, when you're in a relationship and I was
right,
kind
so
of living
you basically
with someone.
Couldn't do a long distance thing and you,
yeah,
you know, you had a certain situation where you had the ability to travel and a lot of things were paid for or whatever. But like, in fact, Ebony was in a similar situation as this. She talked about how there came certain expectations on your time and what you could do.
Right.
And also, I think you probably just felt bad, maybe, like even if you were going to try to like do long distance thing. So it was very much like a making the decision to go off on your own and just do your own thing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I knew that I had to start putting my career first because I wasn't doing that. I did like finish school in my 20s. I got like an associate's degree, which to me, that was a tough one. I did all online schooling and it probably took me 10 years to get that bad boy. But you know what? I did finish it.
Mm-hmm. So why couldn't you put your career first back in Florida?
I was honestly stuck. I was really torn between falling into a position that I was told to be in versus maybe what I'm super into. And I thought maybe coaching was leading me in that direction, but I wasn't entirely sure. And I had a lot of ideas in my head. I knew I could be good at a lot of different things. And then moving to Austin, like the light bulb went off and I knew I had to be a part of this your natural food company, of course, because there's nothing more important than nutrition at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. So you in Florida just didn't have the same opportunities. I mean, because like, obviously you can do anything anywhere, right?
Right.
So what was it? There had to be something else.
I think the biggest thing is I wasn't surrounded by the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah. The environment in Fort Myers,
Florida. Yeah. My environment wasn't,
well, maybe even relationship too.
Yeah. Relationship, environment.
Because there was certain incongruence to what you wanted to do and the way you wanted to live,
you know,
right?
Differences. And I just, I felt a little trapped.
Yep.
So getting out of that trapped mindset is truly, and I think most people experience this at some point in their life, it's truly the hardest thing to overcome.
Well, so here's a question then. You had a certain level of comfort that some people kill for.
Yeah.
Yet it wasn't enough. So why?
No, it wasn't enough because I didn't feel I had that purpose.
Yep.
And being in Austin for a year, I am definitely I'm narrowing in on that purpose. So I'm getting closer to it. I still have some exploration ahead of me. Just, I think, you know, I'm a young person still, so I think that's quite obvious.
Yeah. You're also kind of living for yourself, right? And like managing your own things, making your own money.
Yep.
Like,
I'm on my own, and that was a tough one. You know, you find that you're depending on other people for things, and that's like a big no-no, and I learned the hard way.
Yep.
So when you just start worrying about yourself and taking care of yourself, there's a lot of reward that comes from that.
Absolutely. Would you say there was any addiction related to that? Like, I know that's going to kind of be the focus of what we're talking about, different addictions. And I know, I don't think we've dealt with sugar addiction, shopping addiction. I don't think we're going to be talking about drug addiction, but I still feel like there might have been a little bit of that addiction mindset even in that position.
Totally.
Well, comfort addiction.
Mm-hmm.
What's easy?
Get
addicted to that. Most of us do.
Yeah, I think my shopping addiction developed big time in those years in Florida because my focus wasn't in too many other areas.
Well, so what do you mean? It was the classic, like, I'm going to shop to fulfill myself.
Well, there was nothing that. I'm just obsessed with things. Like, it's just
an addiction.
Yeah, it's just an addiction. And once you go down that road, it's really hard to come out of it. And then once you start buying expensive things to make yourself feel better,
you have to buy more and more.
You got to buy more. There is never a point in time where you can buy enough. Even if I had millions of dollars, I still wouldn't have enough. And that's just a really poor place
to
live in.
That's what a heroin addict does. They have to ingest more and more.
It's a full-on chemical addiction. If you can't overcome it, it will take over your life and run your life. And then you will also see that your environment becomes part of that addiction.
How so?
And the people you surround yourself with.
Okay.
Maybe
not the type of people you really want to be around.
Exactly. The people who care about the material possessions, your relationships diminish because of that. You know, it's really scary what our culture has thrown on us, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely one of the negative aspects of our more everything, more better upgrading. In fact, I watched a cool video the other day by the minimalist guy on YouTube, Matt Deavilli or something. And it was about like the upgrade culture, like how every 6 months you got to upgrade your thing. And if you don't, like, you're missing out or something, right? And like these companies have built billion-dollar businesses that are around us buying the same thing with a slightly better camera, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that's literally an addiction right there. In fact, I'm the least happy with my iPhone that I just got, the most expensive iPhone I've ever gotten, and I feel like it's like the slowest and I'm the least happy with it. Like, yeah. So
that's because you should have an Android.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't want green text messages, but that's a story for another day.
Oh my God. Yeah. You want to talk about the materialism, like what color your text messages are? Get out of here.
It's the ease of use, because I tried to include you in our tribe text message, and
that's
I have been unable to handle. Yeah. So Apple did a very good job at building that
making
little silos.
Stay with Apple.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's part of their business model, right? They all do it. So
yeah, I just wanted to touch on one thing. I think that the shopping addiction really translated into other addictions, because you're constantly living in this state of feel good.
Yeah, it's dopamine high. Yeah, you get constant shots of dopamine.
I'm getting dopamine from all these things that I enjoy doing, whether it's traveling or spending money and buying expensive things. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also getting all the dopamine from drinking the alcohol, going to the fanciest restaurants.
Yeah, eating food that's not great for you.
Eating all the really bad food that tastes super good. And then in the end, I'm like unhappy about everything that I do.
Yep.
So it's really just a toxic environment. It's extremely hard to escape. To this day, I can't say I've escaped all of it, but I've really made some huge, huge changes in my life to move into a direction that I am in control of, because before I was out of control and my head and my mind was just, it was just full on chaos.
So you made the decision to literally drop everything and change your environment. Now we're not suggesting, or I don't think you're suggesting that like your life was terrible, right?
Right. No.
It's not like you were like in a physically abusive relationship or something.
Right.
Right. But there were certain, maybe pros and cons to your situation. There were certain truisms, and that's what we like to talk about in the Sister Mind podcast. Like, what are the first principles? Like, we're talking about shopping addiction and how people get these little dopamine hits. And this is all something that our biology seeks out. Like, now the new thing is phone addictions, which we'll kind of cover. But when the first principle for the human being is, though, that we keep getting more and more of these dopamine hits, and they provide less and less value, right? So then that's kind of the addiction rabbit hole. But then it's also like, when you don't have a purpose and you're not creating or helping or doing something that fulfills you, all of that external stuff you're buying to try to fill that hole, that's again a bottomless pit. You can never fill it.
Never.
So, I mean, but how do you realize that? Because like, if all your stuff's paid for and you can kind of travel anywhere you want, eat anything you want, do anything you want at any time, for a lot of people, that sounds pretty freaking amazing.
You know,
was there a breaking point where they're like, there are certain things that happen? Like,
yeah.
So
I had a couple breaking points. I'll never forget. I was moving apartments. I was packing up my closet and I was looking at the most picturesque blogger dream world closet that I could have ever imagined in my life. I had it, and I had diamonds in my jewelry drawer. I had bags that you couldn't imagine, and I was packing it all up and I just started crying, because I'm like, holy shit, I have so much stuff. This is ridiculous. What has my life come to?
It's like too much. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Colin, we came from not much.
Right.
I never came from that. Yep. You know, so how have I gotten into this position? That was a huge epiphany for me. And so from that moment on, I started realizing like something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And then the other moment, and I'll try to make this quick, is I happened to form a really intense, deep relationship with a professor. He was like basically a living monk. He kind of learned what my life was about. This was in my mid-20s. And he really made me, after I got to know him, I was actually taking an intro to philosophy class. And I'll never forget how impactful this class was in my life. I had never learned philosophy growing up. It was so needed at that time. And I feel like I learned a lifetime of knowledge in one semester, because I had this professor that was basically schooling me and tutoring me and helping me. And he just really made me question every single choice I was making in my life. Mm. And it was so profound. And from that moment on, I started realizing something has to change.
I actually didn't really know that. I'm learning things here today.
That's an intense situation. Well, so
you know, what's funny about that is I found philosophy outside of the college realm.
Yeah.
And I'm a college dropout, right? Proud to admit it. And I'm actually very, at this point, I think college is a scam for most people. Some people, it's, you know, if you want to be a doctor or lawyer, you got to go to college. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But for most people, it's a waste of time, money, et cetera. But you got value out of your one college course. Like, so your opinion is always going to be slightly more pro college, and that's fine. Mine, I got it through books outside of college, through self-study, right? And for me, that just kind of fits my paradigm view of how college is a waste of time, right? But I think it's kind of interesting how we both found philosophy, though. For me, it was stoicism,
yeah,
and in a different way. And it also kind of, this is definitely a first principle, like You felt like you got an education of a lifetime in one semester.
Oh, I can't even put it into words.
Right. So really think about how that could be the case. Like, you have guys that wrote and lectured and did these things thousands of years ago. They're still applicable today.
It's crazy.
Right. So that's the thing people need to understand. We can learn from other people and thousands of years of information that is the stuff that sticks around is probably good ideas. Mm-hmm. Aristotle, Nietzsche, Socrates, Epictetus, all these guys, today more than ever, we need it more than ever, right?
Absolutely.
And this stuff is 2000 years ago. Basically, when Roman society was becoming a thing. And
this is when Jesus was alive, sir. Thank you.
it might've been pre-Jesus.
That's also known as before Christ.
Yeah, BC.
BC.
Yes. I think Aristotle was...
I think it was before them. I don't know if it was before or after.
But should we do a podcast on Jesus?
All the ancient Greek philosophers, you should, absolutely.
Yeah, or all the philosophers. Yeah. No, Stoicism in Greek was after Jesus. So this is probably like 1500 to 1000 years ago. Because actually a lot of Stoicism is actually influenced by a lot of Christian thought is influenced by Stoicism. Yeah. Maybe it is backwards.
They're all like intertwined for sure.
Someone can correct us.
If I was picking the religion that was closest to Stoicism, it would be Buddhism for sure.
Yeah.
Christianity has a lot of Stoic influences. That makes me think that Christianity actually had a rise after Stoicism. Anyways, if someone wants to correct our history, they can send us an email. But I think what I was trying to get at is one of the first principles for humans is like, let's take some of the greatest ideas and the most common things that guys figured out a long time ago when life was like way more difficult than it is today, utilize that in our own lives. And that's why I think philosophy is something that we should teach more in even elementary school, you know, middle school, high school. And it's like, unless you take a philosophy class, nobody knows about these guys at all. And I think it's a big gap in the school system.
Yeah. One of my questions in the class was, you know, do you think that we live in a philosophically illiterate society and why? And I remember that moment just being really powerful for me because I was like, oh my God, yeah, we are totally in a philosophically illiterate society. It's so missed throughout most of our lives and no one touches on it, when in reality, this could solve most people's problems.
Yeah.
Yep.
People think that as long as they virtue signal and 10 go on Twitter and make it sound like they're good people, that can skirt philosophy. And knowing the why behind things is really important. When somebody poses the question to you, a question from philosophy, like, does a tree that falls in the forest make a sound if no one was around to hear it? Like, these kind of things, when you think about them, are super interesting and super important.
Also, most people don't realize that philosophy is not a study of, you know, ancient guys with beards. You know, that would be history. Philosophy is actually the study of how to live life. And that's what people don't understand, which is why it's more applicable now than it has ever been. Mm-hmm. Now, let's move on to, let's just talk about Brent.
Yeah.
Look at Brent over there, sitting over there.
Let's talk about Brent.
Baby, let's talk about you and him. So, exactly. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. So, Brent,
that's hilarious.
Give us a quick rundown. And we're going to do this for each person. We'll do it for me. We'll do it for Jamie, et cetera. Give me paint the last 10 years or even just paint just what happened since you were maybe in Florida in the last time you lost 80 pounds because you were working with us at the box.
Well, we've told that story a little bit before on the podcast, but yes, if we're talking about the last 10 years of my life, it's a lot of nomadic tendencies, a lot of moving from place to place, a lot of moving from job to job, a lot of traveling and a lot of money, things that I don't regret, but yes, a lot money of money
wasting,
disappearing.
Money wasting. Yep.
So if I went back to the beginning of 10 years ago, and I'm thinking even 12 years ago, if we're really getting to the beginning of my poker playing career, and I handle my money differently, I still could have done all the things that I did and just did them a little bit better. And I would have more money to show for it.
Yep.
When I was working at the gym, when we were at CrossFit Estero, that was a transition phase between doing nothing to doing something. I started working with you, and then I ended up moving to Baltimore. I don't even know if I was at the gym for a year, but in that short period of time, in those months, I did lose like 80 to 90 pounds somewhere in there. I wasn't tracking it too much, but a lot of influence on my life came from who I was around then, what they believed in, the CrossFit stuff, the fact that I felt like, yeah, I'm kind of representative of this brand. I better get skinnier to make this make more sense. I look back at this picture I have of me holding Bailey, where I'm sitting like outside of a cafe and I'm like, oh my God, there was nothing. I was so skinny. What happened? Yeah. Moved to Maryland, ended up at another casino management position.
So you went basically from like working on the gym and fitness, like kind of helping us. That didn't really work out the way we wanted it to. And then you moved to Maryland to pursue kind of, again, the poker gambling hospitality industry, yeah, which is what your main experience is.
Yep. That's as much as the gym was good for me physically and good for us personally. A brick and mortar gym just doesn't make that much money. So there wasn't that much money to go around, yeah, and it wasn't enough for sustenance. So yeah, I got out of there, you know, a job like the one at the casino is paying like $100,000 a year. So that sounds like a great idea, great opportunity. Let's go up here and make $100,000 a year. This will, yep, be great. I'll save all this money. Yeah, that didn't happen. And I also ended up entering a really bad relationship, just losing track of anything health related, not caring about anything like that. And then one day I was in this relationship and it dawned on me, because it's really that was the first long-term relationship that I had. I'd been with tons and tons of girls, but I never dated any of them. You know, it never was a long-term thing. It was always very one night standy. I'd been in this thing for like a year and a half, almost 2 years. And for most of that time, I realized I didn't like the person that I was with, but I still stuck it out. And I remembered thinking back and I'm like, man, everybody, all my friends, when I talk to them and I say, what are you doing? Why are you in this relationship? You're not happy. Like, what do you...
Irony.
Yeah, nobody told me that. And outwardly, I probably didn't look as unhappy as I was. And then I realized, I'm like, man, I've become what I thought everybody else was stupid for doing.
Yep.
And I would look at somebody and think, yeah, you're stupid for getting weight. I would look at them and say, you're stupid for staying with that person. And I was doing the exact same thing. So it just goes to show you like how hard it is to break through some of these primal instincts, some of these built-in idiosyncrasies that we have that don't mesh with current society. I came to that realization. I spent about 2 weeks getting my affairs in order, and I just up and left.
How long were you in Maryland for?
About 2 years total.
And so what happened to the job? You said the job didn't happen.
Well, okay, so the job was great, and I enjoyed it, but it wasn't, there wasn't really a future necessarily. I was never going to make more. And Mike Smith, if you end up listening to this, I love you, but we were working four 10-hour shifts instead of 5 8-hour shifts, which was just better for my mental health. I remember the meeting before we decided to get these. I told my boss at the time, to me, working four 10-hour shifts is the equivalent of a $30,000 a year raise. Because one, I could work on something else on the side. I started working on like Amazon. I was doing retail arbitrage. And two, it's enough of a decompressing period to where the monotony and the...
Yeah, it's just
toxicity of the casino environment wasn't preying on me. So one day he took those away.
Took what away?
The 10-hour shifts.
Just for what reason?
There were a multitude of reasons. The reason that he gave was...
As a punishment?
I believe it was as a punishment, yes. There was an employee who had taken a key, and you check out keys at the beginning of your shift in a casino, and then you have to return them. After 12 hours, there's an alert that's sent that says, hey, this guy still has the key. And he called the person, and the person lived very close to the casino, like maybe within a mile. And he said, hey, you still got the key. And he said, okay, well, I'll bring it back in the morning. And our boss is like, no, you're going to bring it back now. Mm. And he's like, no, I just worked a 10-hour shift. I'm not coming back to work. Mm. And then he's like, on top of a bunch of other things kind of happening at the same time, he's like, all right, well, fuck that. We're not doing any more 10-hour shifts. So he took it away. I had my resignation on the desk within 24 hours of those being taken away. And then I quit and I was playing poker there. If I'm playing poker and the games are good, the money's about the same. So whether I am working at a position like that.
So you stay in a relationship, you're playing poker, you're in Maryland, but you're not really happy in your relationship.
Yep, hated my life. So once I finally figured out, once I saw this is what I'm doing, what other people do, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't do anything. I literally packed up all my shit one day after I'd already forwarded all my mail and credit cards and everything to my dad's house and got in the car or packed everything into the car, waited until the girl got home. And I just told her like, all right, we need to talk. I'm leaving. You know, she was upset. And I was like, nope, there's no saving this. There's no going back. Like, you know, you yelled at me yesterday because I ate too many grapes. That's just the icing on the cake. I mean, there's a million stories I could tell about that relationship. And the thing is, she's still a fine person, just not a fine person with me in the relationship that she was in with me. Maybe because sometimes I'm emotionally unavailable or whatever the case. So I literally got in the car, called my dad, and I'm like, hey, dad, coming home to Florida. He's like, what the hell? What do you mean you're coming home to Florida? I hadn't even told any of my friends. I was literally just calling them on the way as I'm driving home. And I'm like, all right, I'm doing that.
So why did you stay in the relationship for so long? And I think the broader question here for everyone at the table is, why are we so addicted to comfort and what's easy? I mean, we know evolutionarily, we've talked about this in other shows, the reason that humans are afraid of the unknown, Brent, is, can you please enlighten our audience?
Because the unknown would kill them.
in the wild, if you're not afraid of like the unknown cave, the dark cave, or like around, if you're not vigilant, paying attention to where you're walking, what would happen? You potentially would die.
Yeah.
Like because you get eaten or whatever.
So those cautious survived.
Yep. Those that are cautious survived. That's why humans were naturally tribalistic. We're naturally racist. All these things come to us as part of our biology, surviving the wild for hundreds of thousands of years. Okay. So we all know fundamentally why we're afraid of the unknown. But the thing is, in our modern world, most of the stuff we're afraid of is like, we're afraid someone's going to like laugh at us or leave a mean comment or something. Like it has little.
I'm not afraid of that.
No. Well, yeah, most people are.
Bring
right?
it on.
Right.
Stupid.
Well, but then what would you
trolls.
Be, what would you be afraid of then? Because if you're afraid of maybe the next thing or you're afraid of maybe failing, like, cause if you stay in something that's not really good for you for a long period of time, maybe you are afraid, maybe you're afraid of change. Like there's gotta be something there.
I think I'm afraid of commitment more than I am of anything else, but the idea that I can't go and I don't want to say it as commitment as far as like a relationship is concerned, but if somebody says, hey, we're going to Colombia in 2 weeks, I said this on the last episode, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to have an experience in my life. Nothing scares me more than, and I'm sure this is a product of kind of what happened to my dad. So my dad really, for most of his life while my mom was alive, he would come home and stay home because he had to take care of my mom. She was disabled and unable to take care of herself for 20 years. At least, mm-hmm. probably longer than that. I think when I was like 12 or 13 is when that started. So he didn't have the ability to just get up and go somewhere. He didn't have the ability to do that kind of thing. And he was doing it for all the moral and all the right reasons. So I see what he did and I'm like, man, I could A, probably never do that. I could never be the hero that he was. And B, I am scared of taking on something like a job, like a casino job. I have to be in that casino every day and you get... Because we're in the United States, you get like 10 days of vacation a year or whatever, you know, then overseas, they get a full month of vacation when they start at any job that they go to, because the American mindset is a little bit different. So anyway, all that kind of rolled together. I was idealizing the person that person that I was dating was when we started, and I hadn't paid attention to the person that they became once we had been in the relationship. I was able to drop that, go home. And that's the first time I came to Austin, I think. That was
soon after
three years ago, maybe four. It was right after you got here. No, you'd been here for a little while because Adam and I came over. I was living with Adam. So that I started living with Adam right when I came back.
I
liked Austin a lot.
What are the signs though? Cause we got to get into some actual valuable content for audience. We got to find some actionable things that they can use to recognize their life. Like when you're stuck in a relationship like that, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are literally stuck in something that they're complacent in, right? Yeah. Or they just aren't maybe investing as much as they should, or their partner's investing as much as they should, right? What do you do to recognize that? Like, what are the signs? Is it just because you, I mean, what I've seen from observing other people and even in my life and past relationship is like, you tend to just fight enough until you're just sick of fighting. Like, yeah. But that's really hard to recognize that. So maybe each of you can speak on like, what was the breaking point for you? What was the internal dialogue? What did you tell yourself? Did you tell friends? Did they tell you? Like, you know, like what was it?
Everything was kind of a knockdown, drag out fight in that particular relationship. And it was for very little things. So like I said, I ate too many grapes was a legitimate thing
but at what point is too many fights about grapes enough and not enough? Cause like some people just do that as part of their daily life.
Yeah. It became too much.
Too frequent?
It was too frequent, or just when I wasn't happy. I am a very happy person. I'm always super happy. I'm always excited for the day to come. I'm impossible to insult. Like there's a lot of things like you just can't.
Yep.
You can't.
I've tried, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no, I am uninsultable. It cannot happen. So when I woke up feeling differently than that, and I was like, man,
but how many days, how many months do you remember? Do you like, was it like 2 months of being like telling yourself every morning, I hate my life?
It was definitely a spectrum.
Like, so some days are better and some are worse.
Yeah. And the person that causes something toxic like that is they're addicted to that toxicity because they're not getting what they want from you. But at the same time, you're still idealizing them. So when they say, I'm sorry, you're right, I'm going to change, I probably shouldn't yell at you about the grapes. Okay, well, I believe you because you mean it. You're not lying to me. You intend to not yell at me about the grapes, but you're going to yell at me about the bananas the next day. So it's like,
yeah, well, I think I don't even know if it's intentional. A lot of people, some people do it intentionally. They may know. A lot of people, I think, just lack of self-awareness.
Yeah, most people, it's not intentional.
I think some people actually genuinely like it. That's what, but they think they don't. They like convinced himself they're in this denial. Like, I don't like fighting or arguing. I'm never doing that again. But they are like literally addicted like a drug.
Yes. Yeah, you know, maybe that's the only emotion they can feel.
There's a lot of entitlement in there too. Mm-hmm. And control. They want to have that control over another person.
Think about even this, like with spanking your kids, you're going to have to think about this at some point in your very near future because you have a new child. There are kids that if you spank them, they stop doing the thing that's bad. They respond to the negative reinforcement. There's also kids that if you spank them, they start doing it more because for whatever reason, that negative reinforcement is something they crave more than the positivity.
Yeah.
A degenerate gambler is the same way. They're not addicted to gambling. They're not addicted to winning. They're addicted to losing.
Yeah.
So the losing is the only thing they can feel. So if you need to feel something and negativity is all you can feel, then yeah, you're going to be addicted.
Perfect
to
segue,
that.
Ladies and gentlemen. What sound effects you got on that board?
A few.
Give me something interesting. That's not drums or womp womp. There we go. So do it again.
It's value bomb time.
Well, oh, that's mine then. You got to give me another one.
Oh.
Just pick one.
Okay.
Okay.
There we go.
That's going to be the addiction alert. So Jamie, phone. Jamie, phone. Because your eyes are diverting because you're either texting or posting. So let's put the phone up on the table right here.
Yep.
Face All down. Right. All right, all now right. Let's talk about
Just got called out.
Okay, let's talk about phone addiction. And I just read a book by Cal Newport called Digital Minimalism. The book's reasonably okay, but really it's just about the idea of how to consciously control your phone notification, social media use so that it enriches your life instead of takes away. And so obviously we all have these stories of going out to dinner, everyone's on their phone, mm-hmm. observing other people always being on their phone. But what I think this topic is very similar to being stuck in a relationship that you aren't really happy, but you convince yourself or you don't want to change or you don't want to be single or all these other things that keep you stuck in that kind of toxic relationship. I think phone addiction is the same way because we get these little dopamine hits. It feels good maybe temporarily, just like in a relationship. You have times where it's good, so you're like addicted to the goodness, right? But then when it's bad, you know, you convince yourself, oh, I'll never do that again. But then that fades and you get back to the dopamines mm-hmm. again. I feel like social media is the same way. How can we recognize like when it's a problem and what can we do about that? And obviously everyone at this table, I'm not pretending anyone, we all have this figured out. We're all on different spectrums. We all use our phones for different reasons and different frequencies. I personally have used it much less. And the one thing that I've done that I've liked the most is earlier in the day during my deep work time, usually the first 4 to 5 hours of the day, is I have my phone in Do Not Disturb. And I'm not checking Slack or messages or these other things. Obviously, a lot of that was for business. But what I realized is when I was having availability all the time, I could not get deep work done. I could not focus. And so I had to basically push as much of that away to later. And really, nothing blew up. Everything was fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to realize that a sign of an addiction to the phone, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this, but I'm going to relate it to eating. Yeah. Because a lot of these addictions are going to work the same. I will eat without even thinking about it if there's a bag of shit next to me for me to eat. Like if there's potato chips there, I crack them open. Some people, they can eat a few of them and then just put them away. For me, I crack it open and I'm just going about my day and it's gone. I eat it until it's gone. I don't think about it.
So how does that apply to phone addiction?
With the phone, you will just open it.
Right, because it's just there.
Swipe yeah. and you'll be on it literally mid-conversation especially, and you didn't think about it.
Yeah, especially you have notifications on.
Yeah.
Right. That is the number one thing because that constantly pulls you away. They've even done studies that show if your phone is face up on the table, you're some percent less involved in the conversation because you're just constantly like thinking about the phone.
Yeah.
But if it's face down, it immediately negates it a little bit more. Right. If it's not even in the same room, it's the best way to actually do it.
There are bars now that are intentionally building themselves in Faraday cages.
You can't use your phone.
I've heard of that. There's
a lot of places like that. Blue Martini Naples, I remember, was like that. Never had a signal. Like
yep.
So, Jamie, I don't think that was intentional. I think that's just
your point about eating and it being available, I think is perfect for the phone because like Sam has been talking about distraction and he said, you know, what is the opposite of being distracted? What do you think the opposite is?
Engaged.
Yeah, or stimulated.
No, like the opposite of it.
Engaged. Fully engaged is the opposite of being distracted.
Well, then maybe that's not what he said. I'll have to remember what he said. But he basically said the opposite, or maybe he would have said the opposite of being focused. Oh, what's the opposite of being focused?
Unfocused?
Distracted.
Being distracted, right. So all he focuses on is getting rid of all distractions.
Yeah.
So that's especially important if you're like, especially when you're trying to work. And that's the whole point of deep work by like Cal Newport is this idea that you don't have any distractions. There's not even people around you that can interrupt you, talk to you, whatever. because those are distractions, and the phone's the same way. And that's why, like, I don't have my phone on or around anytime I'm trying to do work. At certain times of the day, I'll have it on, you know, and I'll be like accessible for those things I need to be accessible for. But for me, that's worked really well. Now, what, like, Jamie, what about you? Cause I mean, obviously you're on your phone quite a bit. Is this something you're working on? You're conscious of? You're trying to do more of, less of?
You're also a social media personality, so
yeah. Right, yeah.
So how do you balance that without getting sucked in too deeply?
It's definitely a challenge. I find myself going in and out of it. Some days are better than others, but recently at night, I realized, wow, I'm sitting here. Like, when I get really tired and my energy has been depleted from my work during the day, I go on social media and just scroll. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I acknowledge it and I'm like, oh my God, in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, Jamie, stop, put it away, go get a book. And that's why, so I have made those adjustments recently, and I just finished a book in 4 days.
Awesome.
And I said to Brent, I'm like, you know, this is very unlike me. If anyone knows me, they know Jamie doesn't read a book in 4 days. But just making those small changes have really impacted me. I can't say that I have it all figured out, because I still find myself scrolling, and I get super upset about it, because I'm like, just stop now while you're ahead.
What is the ancestral connection here? Like, how
dopamine? It's all dopamine.
Why did we develop dopamine? Like, why is that a thing?
Right. So Mother Nature rewarded humans to do things that procreate and propagate the species. Right. Why do you think food's so damn good?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, food's delicious.
If we don't eat, we're going to die. Like, and in the wild where food is scarce, if we are not trying to always get food, especially calorie dense meat, or if, like, if we found fruit or honey, we would just gorge. Right. Why? Because we need to survive. Right. And that's another reason why fruit and honey are nature's way of basically fattening us up. Because when we would find it, only sometimes, it'd be a really good survival adaptation, because we would gain fat, and that would help us live longer. Right. In our modern world, food is around us all over. So it's literally the opposite. In the wild, food's hard to come by. That's why we would fast a lot. We wouldn't always have access to things, especially carbs and sugar were very hard to come by generally. In our modern food environment, carbs and sugar are the default, which is why we're now fat as a result. Okay. So dopamine rewards us in other ways too. When you get likes and approval, what does that help you do? Like, why would would that do in a tribe setting?
It would elevate your status in the tribe.
Yeah.
Or at least improve your relationships and make a stronger bond. And a stronger bond for a tribe in the wild means everybody's more likely to survive. Mm-hmm. If you literally love someone, you will fight for them, die for them, etc. And that will help the entire group, right? It's always about group survival. If you ever lose status in a tribe, and this is why we're so afraid of, like, dislikes and negative comments. If you ever lose status in a tribe, you could potentially be kicked out of the group. If you're kicked out of the group in the wild, it's a death sentence. Some of them will, hunter gatherers will even club you. Like, there's this one guy, he used to,
like a seal.
Literally, he said, all the old women are afraid of me, because if you ever become, in some hunter gatherers, it's different than others, but like in this one particular tribe, if you ever became a strain on the group and you didn't offer some value, they could, this one guy was like the default guy to go around. He would sneak up behind you and hit you with a club and kill you.
So this guy was like the Donald Trump of the tribe, like, but not like the president Donald Trump, like you're fired.
Yeah. Except you're killed. Right.
When Trump was just cute.
It just goes to show you how all of these things are a byproduct of our evolutionary past, of our environment, of living in the harsh wild. It's hard to survive in the harsh wild, and we have to be rewarded. So we go on social media to get these little dopamine hits. We get these little external validations. We like people to see that we have money and status and likes and all these things, because it makes us feel good, even though it is very much a hollow feeling.
Yeah.
And we overdo it because it's so accessible. Also, what would you do if more people liked you in the tribe? You not only would be more likely to get food, but you would also have more access to mates, because a quality social standing, or at least one where you don't have, you know, people gossiping about you, or in fact, gossip is a cool thing. Gossip is a way we kind of kept people in check. Like, if you did something bad in the tribe and everyone gossiped about you, it was a way to basically check your behavior.
I mean, that we discussed that on one episode already. That's legitimately alive and well. I mean, you see that.
Oh yeah, we do today, obviously.
But it's different today, because the gossip now is out of your hands and it's not meaningful to your life.
It's nothing but toxicity now.
Right. Like, in a tribe, it's probably meaningful and you need to be aware of it and acknowledge it.
Yes.
Today, you can't be aware of it or acknowledge it.
Yes. Well, especially when it's from strangers. Gossip was never meant to be from, like, people you don't know. People you didn't know were could be an enemy tribe. But you don't care what they think.
Now we have millions of strangers looking at us through the screen and gossiping
and finding and then anything voicing you've ever it. Posted ever.
Your question was, Brent, why do we, what was your question again? We
dopamine and phone.
Oh, dopamine, phones. Yeah. Yes. These are all, again, these are rewards that reward our species to do things because Mother Nature thinks we're still in the wild. Yeah, we're not. We're in man-made environments.
Well, we just haven't had enough time to evolve out of it. I mean, right. If you think of all of human history, we are not that far removed from the wild. Like, we just aren't.
Yeah, we're not.
Well, yeah, but that's even more reason why the ancestral mind perspective is so important. Because do you know what percent of our human evolution that we've been in a modern world?
Well, it depends on what you call a modern world, but
it's 12,000 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you take Homo sapiens evolution, it's about 220,000 years or so, right? But then you take even Homo erectus and primate evolution, which is millions of years. Humans have been living in modern environments for like less than a percent of a percent.
Right.
Yeah. Which is why we haven't caught up. Amount. And which is, but then take
and a step. And we've eliminated natural selection. So.
Well, yeah. And take a step further. How long have we had the processed food industry?
Oh, yeah. 200 not long years. At all.
No, not even no, that. No, it's no, like wait. Literally like 60 to 70 years.
Oh, processed food. I thought you meant like agricultural.
Yeah. Agriculture. No, we've had a long time.
Processed food, which basically started after World War II. In fact, you know that M&M's is just a weird side note. M&M's were designed for soldiers and they had to get a coating so because the chocolate would melt in their pockets. And so they create a candy shell. And then that's how they came up with the slogan.
So that it melts in your mouth.
So it melts in your mouth. And that became a huge thing. Yep. And so
this episode is brought to you by.
Definitely not brought to you by that.
We feed them to kids because that's acceptable.
Well, yes. Speaking of sugar addiction and sugar issues in general, we kind of touched on shopping addiction, sugar addiction, food addiction. Right. Even sex addiction for people, external validation. These are all things that humans seek out because Mother Nature has to keep us alive. Right. So we kind of understand that. Now, what about sugar? Who wants to get up to bat?
I'm going
to
dive into this because it's something that I like to discuss and highlight. I think for women, we experience it a bit more intensely than men because we have our menstrual cycle.
Maybe not me.
Sorry?
Oh, sorry. I was yawning in the middle of saying that. I was saying, maybe not me. I'm pretty addicted. Button.
Yeah, total womp womp, dude.
Thanks for that, Brent.
So I think
womp myself.
Us women, you know, we are kind of told and made to believe that we get our cycle every month and it's an excuse to go eat sugar and salty foods and pizza and gorge because we get these cravings. But that's all incorrect. And really, really harmful and toxic to us. So like myself, I've been dealing with intense cravings and abnormal cycles every month since I was 15. And, you know, I've been popping Advil like it's my job. That's a discussion in itself. CBD has changed my life in that regard. But as far as sugar, I'm totally addicted. I made a big change last year when I implemented a higher fat, lower carb diet, mostly keto, I would say. I think that it's extremely powerful. It gets us closer to nature, basically the closest you can get to nature with a high fat diet. I low key want to be a carnivore, but that's also a discussion in itself. If I was in nature, I would probably be eating mostly meat anyways. Mm-hmm. So back to the sugar, I still feel very addicted to it. My cravings are through the roof, like on the regular.
What do you do when you get a craving?
Well, even though I experience the cravings intensely still, I just resort to other options. Like, for instance, I make my own homemade fat bombs. So
what are the ingredients on one of those?
It's basically homemade chocolate and I just use cocoa powder.
Wild cocoa powder.
Yeah, wild cocoa powder, wild coconut butter. A little bit of salt.
Wild pink salt.
Wild pink salt.
All right, Hold on. Let me stop everybody here. This episode of the Ancestral Mind Podcast is brought to you by Wild Foods. Real food, real ingredients, wildfoods.co. Use the code AMPODCAST12. Get 12% off your order. Tell them Brent sent you. They'll love it.
I love you, Brent, so much. Thank you for that. And also some Wild Foods cocoa butter as well. That is one of my techniques. But I also just sometimes if I'm feeling cravings, I just eat real food. Like at night, if I want sugar, I'll have a sweet potato with butter on it, you know? Whereas in the past, I would always eat chocolate. I was always purchasing chocolate from Whole Foods. It was super expensive. It has all this added sugar in it.
Norman Love.
And then on top of that, I was eating sugar and fruit in every meal because I thought that was acceptable, quote unquote, or quote unquote, you know, normal. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, okay, this whole sugar thing, this carb thing has got to go. And so I definitely feel better about all of it. It's not gone, and I don't think it will be for a while because it's a full-on addiction. And I truly think that it is the underlying issue for most people's eating problems.
Yeah. So you, real quick, what's how do you make a fat bomb?
You drop the ingredients into a pan, you melt it down, you put it into some kind of mold.
So low heat, and you basically you mix it till it's mixed.
Pour it into, you can do little cupcake.
What do you use for sweetener?
Silicone molds. I actually use a monk fruit now.
And so you taste it in the pan, like to taste.
Oh, yeah.
And then you pour it into a silicone mold.
Yep. And then I freeze it, and that's it.
And then you freeze it.
It's ready to go.
And then it's like hard chocolate, basically, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
or
like
a hard chocolate.
Homemade peanut butter cup or something.
Oh, yeah. I've made cashew cups before.
Yeah, my favorite is cashew butter.
You can do it with almond butter.
Is this why we have so many little silicone things that like are in the shape of like Millennium Falcons and
bombs.
Stuff here?
Fat bomb makers.
Wow. Yeah, I was wondering why.
We also make gummies.
You can make gummies with wild collagen, which we just got back in stock. And we... Okay, so the fat bomb is a good strategy for when you have sugar cravings, right? But also you mentioned just eating real food. Now, something I've been doing, and you mentioned carnivore, because I've also been thinking about this a lot more, and most people don't realize that protein is the most satiating nutrient you can eat. It also requires your body to burn the most calories to even digest. So like if you have 100 grams of chicken, you're not, or steak, you're not actually absorbing 100 grams of chicken. It's probably something like 80 to 85. There's actually a conversion you can do to kind of figure it out, because your body has to spend like 20 calories just to burn off and utilize the protein, which is something kind of fascinating. And so that's one strategy that I found. Like if you're eating enough protein, or at least at times upping your protein intake, you're just not going to be hungry for anything else. Mm-hmm. Protein really fills you up. Right. Yeah. And then obviously fat does as well. But I think those are really good strategies. Now, but why should people stop eating sugar? Like, we haven't really covered that. In other shows, we've covered some of the mechanisms behind biology, hormones, fructose, and how fructose is processed in the liver. And that's kind of a longer discussion. But what if for you, why have you wanted to get off sugar? I mean, is it because it just like kind of leads you to eating other things? Does it lead you to messing up your appetite?
When you feel that it triggers something far beyond what you can control, you know it's a problem.
What's an example? Like, how does that feel?
So when I eat something and I feel like it's like an out of body experience, and I know not enough people touch on this, but it truly is when you eat something like a brownie or a cookie, at least for me, I feel there's no, it's such a high. Mm-hmm. It's such a huge dopamine release. And when I realized that I was constantly craving all this stuff, I mean, I knew I had a problem. And it obviously leads to weight gain. It leads to disorders, and obviously now addiction.
Your cycle,
yeah, right, hormones, it's just so incredibly powerful. And I feel like it controls my choices.
Yeah, well, it definitely does. And on some of our other shows, we'll go into why that is. A real brief for today's listeners is Dr. Luswig is actually the big fructose guy. So he talks about how fructose, he believes, is the number one reason we're obese in this country today. And fructose, for those of you who don't know, is 50% of every gram of sugar. So when you have sugar, cane sugar, beet sugar, whatever, all the sugar that you find in processed food, any sugar that is actually even just fruit sugar, right? Whether it's an orange, an apple, whatever, is always going to have about 50% fructose in it. High fructose corn syrup actually has 55% fructose and then 50% glucose. Now, the thing about fructose is it can only be processed in your liver. 35. And because it can only be processed in your liver, you run into issues like it contributes to fatty liver. You also, when the fructose, there's too much of fructose and your liver gets full, where does it go, Brent?
To your poop.
No, it doesn't.
To your fat.
To your fat.
Yeah,
when your liver fills up with fructose, like, right? The only place that fructose can go is the fat cells.
Yep.
So real quick aside on fruit. If you make a post on social media about fruit, maybe helping you gain fat or contribute to fat gain, not necessarily saying it's bad, just saying fruit is more likely to make you fat because it is biologically designed that way. It is because it's got fructose in it. People, they get pitchforks. They want to roast you, right? The reason for that is because everyone's led to believe that fruit and vegetables are like, you know, God's gift to the human animal. But that's not really the case. If you are eating a lot of fruit, you are increasing the likelihood you're going to gain fat. That's just the way it is. We're not saying it's good. We're not saying it's bad. People that need to gain fat should be eating fruit because it's more likely to make you fat. But if you're trying to watch your fat gain or control your body weight, you need to be conscious of fruit intake. And again, because fruit has fructose and it's fruit sugar, and even though people say, oh, it's just natural sugar, it's still going to more likely contribute to fat gain for primarily the reason of fructose.
How messed up is Weight Watchers? They count it as zero. Like you do not have to count fruit if you're on Weight Watchers.
It's a multi-million-dollar company.
That doesn't get anybody results.
Yeah.
How the hell do they stay in business? Why? Because they literally convince women that they're doing something. Like it's literally nothing more than buying peace of mind.
I think Oprah bought into that company actually.
Yeah, I think she's an investor.
Her face is on it.
Yep.
But
Oprah's never really been skinny, so.
Yeah,
I know we'll get some people that aren't like that statement, but it's a true statement. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I'm starting to believe more than I ever have that fruit and plants don't have much place for us humans.
Or at least not the way they're promoted.
Right, exactly. Right? That's a better way to say it. I think that there's going to be a ton of research coming. It has already gained traction in the health and nutrition world, but I think it's really going to skyrocket like this year. Yeah. And
I hope so.
It's already making waves.
And then we're going to get into some of the issues for like any of our listeners that believe that, you hear everyone say that the cattle industry, they say it's the number one detriment to the environment. Well, yes, I agree with that. Factory farming. Mm-hmm. But when you raise cows naturally, like if you look at what Joel Salatin of Polyface Farms is doing, his natural, it's a grazing kind of rotation where he moves cattle to different areas mm-hmm. and then they eat the grass. They actually are able to regenerate topsoil faster than nature itself. So there's literally a way where we could feed every human on the planet with animals if we did it in a very biodiverse way.
Yeah.
We wouldn't maybe be able to feed people red meat every day for every meal, mm-hmm. but we could definitely feed them maybe a few times a week and while including other animals, while including chickens that roam and eggs and pork and things like that, and then throwing in your plants and your vegetables here and there. And there is a way where we could be sustainable while also feeding people meat. Don't fall into the dogma of just thinking mm-hmm. that meat is bad or bad for the environment. Cause that, and again, let's do a whole show on that. But for the most part, for sure. That is complete and utter illusion. And it's based on factory farming, which factory farming should be against the law. And we are totally in agreement on that point. So we're going to wrap today's show up by talking a little bit about comfort zone. Each of us obviously have our own journeys, our own story. We've struggled with, repeating the same mistakes for periods of time. We've grown, we've evolved. And let's kind of ask each person, what was an example of something they were stuck in and what did they do to get out of it? Jamie, you go first.
Okay. So I feel like I'm in the middle of my journey or maybe even just the beginning of it. But I will say that I was in a position that I wasn't happy in. I felt that I couldn't get out of it. And one day I made the choice to just do it and become really, really uncomfortable and hate it and feel terrified. And I still find myself getting into situations very similar to that. Even in my career, I sometimes feel scared and terrified, but I feel those are the best ways to go about life because if you're not scared and terrified, you're not doing something right.
So you're saying,
correct.
You're saying seek out discomfort.
Absolutely.
Because that's a sign of growth.
When I am comfortable, I know I'm actually uncomfortable because I know it's not right.
So you made a big decision. It didn't happen overnight.
Correct.
I mean, what was there anything specific? Was there any books? Was there any articles? Did you like have a conversation with someone that said something that like switched your mind? Like what did you,
well,
I mean, obviously it was a process, but.
I started reading more books, like probably more self-help books in my later 20s.
Yeah, I think it's a good strategy for everybody.
And I think a lot of light bulbs went off and I had a lot of encouragement from you and family.
Yep.
So when you put it all together, it ends up having an impact on me. It can either help or it can just sit there and not do anything for you. And I think at the end of the day, it ended up being assisting me in my choice.
I mean, environment is huge. Mm-hmm. But were there any changes you made leading up to that? Did you change anything in the relationship? Did you change people you were hanging out with?
Yeah.
Like, did you stop going to the malls much? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, I mean, my life was pretty wild. In my early 20s, I was partying all the time. I was into drugs. I moved to New York City. I was like a crazy person. I just did whatever I wanted. I didn't care about anyone or their opinion of me. I very much did whatever I wanted, really. I didn't have anyone telling me anything and I wouldn't listen if they did. And as I got into my later 20s, I became less interested in drinking, less interested in partying, less interested in surrounding myself with those kinds of people. And I knew that there was more for me. And so I just slowly started moving towards that direction, even though it basically hurt because it was hard. And it's a hot topic.
You said it was the most difficult decision you've ever made.
Oh,
yeah. You moved from Florida to here, right?
Oh, yeah. And also making the choice to, you know, try and remove myself from the
toxic environment,
the drinking environment,
not eating out as much.
Yeah. Not eating out and just being and making every choice on my own. Really. So,
okay. Obviously, in a format like this, we're trying to find actionable tips we can give our audience. But what I think everyone needs to also understand is that it's going to be a process either way.
Right.
Right. So you can't be too hard on yourself. You're not going to be perfect overnight. You're going to have to make subtle changes here and there. It sounds like you made subtle changes first in maybe what you were doing and your habits, right? Basically changing your environment as much as you could. Mm-hmm. And then that led one thing to another. And then eventually got to the point where like your last choice was to basically move out of the state.
Yeah. And I think all the subtle changes end up leading to a big change. Yep. And even being in Austin for the last year, I've made even more changes in my life. I've gone a step further. Yeah. I'm still making them all the time. You know, I feel like 6 months ago, my life was really chaotic and now I am super clear-headed and I have much more clarity and I'm ready to pay off some debt and I'm just like in a new place and it's just really,
that's awesome.
Really great.
Brent, what about you real quick? What is something that you were stuck in and then what did you do? Even if you're the type that would literally say, all right, pack up my car, I'm leaving tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to do that.
No.
There's got to be instances where you didn't do that either.
Yeah, there are instances in life where I didn't do that. The most obvious is my weight, but we've talked to listeners about that a lot. I'll dive into this a little bit more. I'm big, big dude. I know that needs to change. I know it needs to fix itself. Surrounding myself by the people that I've surrounded myself with here, part of the reason I up and moved to Austin out of nowhere, and going from Baltimore is not the only time. I mean, I up and moved here. But part of that is knowing that surrounding yourself in a better environment is better for you. So that's one up and out of nowhere change that I made. There's also times when I'll just say to myself, okay, I'm eating 1,000 calories this week or whatever. But what I've noticed is when I tell other people about it, when I say, hey, I'm going on a diet, I'm doing keto, I'm doing low calorie, I'm doing paleo. If I just start telling people about it and they start giving me positive reinforcement, I will not do it. So if you're trying to break out of something,
for most people that will work, ladies and gentlemen.
That's so weird. So, yeah, I thought that's where we're going with
but
that.
But this is why self-awareness is important because maybe it doesn't work for someone like Brent.
Telling people that I'm doing it now doing it is
you know,
I
know why
thing.
That is though because people like to tell people about their plans because it makes them think they're doing something.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of advice that says you shouldn't even tell people your goals. You should literally just go get them.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Because you convince your brain that you're actually doing something.
When I go do stuff and I don't tell people about it. I start a podcast and I only, most of my friends probably don't even know I have the crypto podcast, even though it's ridiculously popular because I don't tweet about it. I don't use Facebook. I do tweet, but my Twitter was mostly only created because of the podcast. So I don't tell those people that. I'm not saying, hey, I'm going to do a podcast. Hey, I'm going to lose weight. Hey, I'm going to go someday to Europe. Because what are they going to say to you?
You're too busy doing it.
They'll say to you, like, that's really good. You should do that. Oh, my God, great choice. I can't wait to see you when you lose weight. That's good. And they're giving you all that same positive reinforcement that you would get
if you
showed up 50 pounds lighter.
Yeah, it's like fake results in your mind.
So you get the same positive reinforcement from somebody who hasn't seen you do anything as when people do see you do it. So that's a way to get yourself kind of stuck in a rut and not doing something. So if I was giving an actionable advice, I would say make the changes you know you need to make, but don't go around broadcasting it. Just do it.
Yeah. Broadcast the results, not the
post
choice.
The picture of yourself down 50 pounds on Facebook. Don't post the picture of yourself day one saying, can't wait to do this. Mm-hmm. Gonna lose some weight.
All right, my turn.
What about you?
I have a lot of things, but my biggest thing was recently I realized this. So we had Daro about 7 months ago and I.
Bro, his 6 month birthday was like 2 days ago.
a week ago. But anyways, I'm not good with dates, but that's fine. So we'll say 6 to 7 months. Same. It's all the same to our audience. Okay. And I was trying to figure out what my work routine was going to be. Right. I used to work. I still work a little bit at night. I've had to work a little bit less at night because I tend to get woken up more in the night from him or, you know, it's just hard when there's so much going on in the house with dogs and nanny and him and noise and everything. And so like, it's definitely disrupted my sleep a little bit. And so I haven't been able to stay up as late to get as much of that deep work done. So what happened was I was getting tired earlier in the day. I would get less deep work done because I was just too tired. You know, I say earlier in the day, it's like one or 2 a.m. when I used to go to bed at like 4 to 5. I was getting a lot less work done and that causes a lot of resistance and anxiety in my brain. Like mm-hmm. when I'm not being productive, I just feel like not myself, right? And I had to figure out what to do. And so I tried to work early in the day. I tried to go to the coffee bar here, and then I was doing that for a while, and that was I was kind of working. I would get here a little bit earlier, but then like a lot of the Wild Crew would start showing up, and they're always asking me questions and doing things. And
Colin, then, this, not the other.
Exactly. Colin, what about this? What about that? And I'm just like, you know, then my deep work is being interrupted.
Have you tried wearing a do not disturb vest or...
Do not talk to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue. I'm sorry. I don't mean to take away from your point.
So I was trying to do YouTube this time, and I had no place to record because there's you need peace and quiet, right? If I'm at home, even my door closed in my office, you can still hear everything going on in the house, right? And so I was like, I literally have to get a place where I can go to record where nobody's around, and I don't want to have to record at 4 a.m. either, right? So I got a studio here at the Domain. And actually, it was the most amazing thing ever because now we're recording the podcast. And we've done a bunch of videos as a result, and it's just a really great thing for the business.
I promptly moved in so that you didn't have a place to yourself.
Yeah, this is Brent's residence.
Yeah, well, at least it's helping pay for the rent now a little bit, Brent. but I had to. It took me about a week to realize that I needed to change my environment, and I had to. Like, it wasn't obvious. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, it didn't seem obvious that why am I not getting work done? I had to really think about it and try to identify why that was.
Break it down to the first principles, Colin.
And so I, you know, got the studio, and that led me to more YouTube videos. And then I kind of figured out a little bit better work routine. And then now, after he's sleeping better, I actually can go a little bit more back to getting some of my deep work done later in the day. And so it's just all better. But I think the biggest lesson for me, even though this is something I've known, is like, you really, really have to control your environment for absolutely. A lot of things, whether that's what you're eating, the people you're hanging out with. If you're around people that are drinking and you don't want to drink, that's never going to work. You will always be sucked in. If you're around people that want to eat well
I've never convinced you to drink.
And you're never eating well.
But you've convinced me, Brent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was real hard.
Then you're never going to. Brent, is there a mute button for you? I'm going to have to install that on that mixer right there. Because I keep losing my train of thought. But basically, you have to control your environment, okay? And you have to be conscious of your environment. And a lot of times, we aren't conscious, and we don't realize that we can have control or that we should control, and we get sucked into bad habits, bad routines, whatever. And to close this out, it just reminded me of one thing. They did a study recently that showed that, and this is really weird, but kind of shows you the power of environment. If one of your friends that lives across the country gains weight, you are now like 60% more likely to gain weight.
Jeez.
Like some crazy stuff.
Wild.
But a lot of it is just because the subtle influence of the human beings and how we influence each other. So, and also if you work and eat in a place where there's other coworkers around you, and they're all eating junk food or going out to lunch every day, you have to literally remove yourself from that environment, or you will not going to, you're just never going to have willpower, right? Willpower is an illusion. So the only way you can make changes is to change your environment. Now, does anybody have anything, any call to actions? In fact, where can we get Jamie's How to Break Sugar Eating ebook?
Yeah, what's the title? Four tips on how to break your sugar addiction and just improve
based on your experience. Okay.
Yeah.
And that is at ketolikejamie.com.
Yes.
And you'll be able to find the download to get that. So I highly recommend doing that. And
also my YouTube.
Okay. How do we find your YouTube?
So search Jamie Stuckert.
Jamie, Stuckert.
Yeah, on YouTube.
I like how you confirmed the spelling there.
Y'all will see some really good videos, and I'm coming out with more all the time.
All right. And I think that's a wrap, unless, Brent, you have anything to add, or you have anyone to interrupt?
No. I've done all my interrupting for the show. I even, you know, threw on some stuff. That's kind of it. So what I will add is that we are not nutritional advisors. Anything that we talked about as far as health, nutrition, anything like that, please consult a medical professional before implementing any changes in your diet or your life. Unless they're just, you know, straight up mental, that might just be good for you.
These statements are also not approved by the FDA and not designed to diagnose or treat any diseases. So please be smart with your health.
Thank you so much, Jamie, for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. That was so much fun. I hope to do it again.
We'll be back.